My talk this morning is from the book How to Change Your Life by Ernest Holmes. And this little segment is called The Kingdom of Heaven. And it comes from the part of the We Believe statement that Ernest Holmes wrote for the Science of Mind community about what the general understanding is that we have of what God is, what the universe is, what we are, how it all works together. And this part is where Ernest said, we believe that the kingdom of heaven is within us, and that we experience this kingdom in the degree that we become conscious of it. He went on to say, heaven is not a place, but an inward state of consciousness, an inward awareness of divine harmony and truth. The spirit has placed divine intuition within everyone, the gateway through which the inspiration of the Almighty enters the mind. The kingdom of heaven is something we possess, but not have been conscious of. Not some far-off divine event, but within. The treasure of the kingdom is already hid at the center of our being, and when we discover it, a great joy follows. The kingdom of God is not something we create, but something we must realize, something we become inwardly aware of. So, honestly, the phrase the kingdom of heaven is not something that easily comes to mind for me, but what it represents to me, based on what he said and what I've lived, is that it's that connection that we have within and that feeling of joy that he described when we fall into that connection. When we find it, when we hear it, when we feel it, when we see it, when we know it, when we follow it, that divine love that is the truth of our being at the center, that's what he's describing as the kingdom of heaven. Finding that center place that is the very beginning of every prayer. We say in Science of Mind, which starts with God is, and we start describing that kingdom of joy and love and health and peace and wholeness. That is the grace that is the impetus of Ernest Holmes saying, we believe that the kingdom of heaven is within us, and we experience it in the degree that we become conscious of it. So, what we do when we pray, when we meditate, when we contemplate source, is find that connection, that internal knowing. And there are so many ways to describe it, to feel it, to experience it. And I was reminded from a talk I gave on the same subject that I discovered this morning from 11 years ago, that that talk was called The Mystical Experience. And that's one way of saying that coming conscious of that inner light and love is what's described as a mystical experience. And that talk reminded me that when I teach mysticism, I always teach that everybody doesn't hear or see or feel. Everybody has their own way of learning from source, just as they have a way of learning in the outer world. So when we're at school, we learn visually by reading, and we learn auditorily by listening to talks and lectures and teachers. We learn kinesthetically by experiencing the feeling of something through movement or emotionally. And our mystical connections are like that. And when I used to teach that, I remember somebody coming up to me in the middle of a science of mind class and saying to me, "I don't have those mystical experiences everybody else is describing. When we go into meditation, I just had an experience. I just felt a deep inner peace. I didn't hear anything, I didn't see anything. And I just paused and waited. And suddenly the light went on." And she said, "Of course, I never felt a deep inner peace before." And she got it. She got it that that was her connection. And it may always be her connection. Wasn't always the same for me. I started out seeing pictures. In meditation, I would have a vision of something. I remember the first one I ever wrote down. I saw myself with a teddy bear on a merry-go-round. And I asked what the meaning of that could possibly be. And the answer I got was taking the teddy bear on the merry-go-round made me feel comfortable and let me enjoy the ride. But I was embarrassed that the other kids saw that I needed a teddy bear. And that was, must have been close to 35 years ago. When I first found Science of Mind, I was sort of uneasy about delving into this thing that seemed kind of woo-woo and weird to me. And so I started seeing these visions in our meditations that helped me understand what was happening to me, how I was feeling. And so, contemplating this idea of perceiving that inward state of consciousness, I had an experience this week where I was in Claremore Park and I was walking along the shore, and I looked over and there was a really pretty, pair of willow primrose plants that had two beautiful yellow flowers. And they were right next to each other. They were lined up. And I looked at them, and they appeared to be about the same height and in the same line from where I was standing. And I took the picture, and then I walked to the right looking for the black-crowned night heron, which I do every day now. And when I looked back at the two willow primrose plants, they were quite distant from one another. One of them was over here on the shore, and the other one was over in the water, considerably lower. From that perspective, my perception was very different. Same two flowers, but looked at from a different perspective. And so I realized that what I see depends on where I'm looking from. Am I looking from that inner awareness, or am I observing what's happening out here? And there are like a million ways I could be doing what, observing what's happening out there. There are also many ways I could be contemplating that inner awareness by tuning to love, by meditating, by listening to music, by experiencing nature, by swimming laps. I do a lot of meditation while I'm swimming laps. There are so many different ways we can find that within place. And so many ways, excuse me, we can look at that outer vision as well. And I was reminded of something someone had said on an Abraham workshop this past week. And it was the question, not the answer, that got my attention. The questioner said, "I'm really working on the emotional scale." I'm really working on the emotional scale. And I noticed that at every emotional level on that scale, I have access to different thoughts, emotions, interactions, and beliefs. I notice that solutions I come up with from one level are different than the solutions that occur on a higher level. And I really love the practicality of paying attention, being determined to be on a higher emotion, because it's made a difference in relationships, in solutions, in money coming in, and in vitality. I love that. On the emotional scale, when we're in fear, the solutions we come are run away, maybe. When we're in anger, the solution comes to fight. When we're worried, the solution comes to be really immersed in imagining terrible things. But when we're moving into that space of letting go and finding our peace, we're focused on what we're grateful for, what we can give thanks for, not what we're missing, but what we already have. And we're feeling appreciation for life. And as we continue to move up the scale, we feel more optimistic and enthusiastic and ultimately filled with love and joy. And at every one of those places, the experiences we have are different. The solutions we experience are different. The relationships, the physical feelings we have are different if we are connected and enjoying that peace, that awareness of harmony and truth within us, or if we're experiencing disconnection from fear or anger. So different. And it changes our lives when we set that intention to see things differently, to connect differently. And so, what the talk I gave 11 years ago on this subject reminded me is that I wrote a number of books on this, and it, looking at perception and perspective, I wrote a second book on perception, and I wrote a third book on perspective. And so I want to share some of the things that Beloved and I talked about because When I read these things this morning, it took me to a higher level. And I have lots of other quotes that I wrote down during the week to share with you, but they never gave me the same feeling of love and appreciation and joy that these did. So I want to go here. And these are all things we've talked about many times over the years. The first one, the reading is from book three, and it's called Soft Willingness. And Beloved talked about soft willingness, and I was chatting with the Beloved about the fact that I had the experience of knowing a connection, but it was inside and out. Sometimes I would have these extraordinary visions and mystical experiences, but I didn't live there all the time. And the relationship I developed with the Beloved came when I read the book The Shack by William Carl Jung, and he talked about having a fully realized relationship in the book. And I thought, I want a relationship that is moment to moment familiar intimacy with the divine. And as my friend Kathy said, she wanted to know what Mac's relationship with God came after the book ended. She wanted the story to continue for him. And I realized that the brilliance of the book was that it doesn't answer that question. But I was inspired to ask, I wonder what a relationship like that would look like for me. And then I wandered over here to see. That's the invitation, beloved. The I wonder is an invitation. And beloved said, I wonder expresses a soft willingness to explore. Soft willingness, what a sweet phrase, beloved. I love the feel of it, just a gentle opening to possibility. Beloved said, we can do so much more for you if you approach life with a soft willingness. Riff on I wonder and see where it takes you. I said, Obi, I wonder how good I can feel. I wonder how much love I can experience and express. I wonder how it will feel to talk to more people about the Beloved. I wonder what would happen if some of them started to wonder about having a loving relationship with the divine. I wonder how much more heavenly the earth can feel as more people connect with the divine. I wonder how happy people can feel as they recognize they are loved, supported, and supplied. I wonder how happy I can be as I explore my relationship with you longer and deeper. I wonder feels easy and good, B. And B said, keep exploring, I wonder, in your imagination. And that felt really good to me. And then I was reminded of another reading from a month later in 2010. I love sharing stories about how you say things that touch my heartbeat. I tear up when I tell people what you said about soft willingness. Can I invite other great things into my life with soft willingness? He said, of course you can see, but you cry because you still can't quite let yourself believe life could be that easy. I said, I can feel the truth in that, B. And that it is somehow related to what we were saying about everyone carrying a baseline level of tension. He said, "We love that you're so much more willing to speak your feeling about an intuitive connection. That's a soft willingness." I said, "You're saying that brings tears to my eyes again, B." They said, "You're feeling our love. That's a very good thing." Learning to put words with feelings is going out on a limb, C. Makes you feel vulnerable. That relates to your baseline level of tension. Being willing to be open about what you're feeling comes from feeling relaxed and secure, where there is a part of you that is afraid of anything in any way, you feel defensive. That defensiveness sets up a tension, a resistance in your body and your mind. When you feel secure and relaxed, you are open and allow life to flow. When you feel defensive, it's like you put the brakes on. Then life is more start and stop, jerk and resume motion. Some people have big paralyzing fears. Most people's fears are more subtle. Fear of making a mistake, of saying the wrong thing, of getting it wrong, or fear of not being enough, or making a fool of yourself, or being too aggressive. Like everyone has a constellation of gifts, everyone also has a collection of angsts. We applied your courage in being softly willing to move beyond your comfort zone. Taking tiny steps is a great way to test the waters of feeling more secure. I said, baby steps do make me feel more secure. He said, there's always a next gentle step you can choose for your growth. Opening your heart and mind to love is an incremental, infinite process. Giant shifts can happen, but they're harder to sustain over time. Taking the next gentle step is a much easier, more enduring path. You find your balance many times along the way. And I said, so I'm on the path of lowering my baseline level of intent, a level of tension, becoming more secure, and allowing my life to flow. And I said, I'm feeling the value of relaxing, B. I love that relaxing releases resistance and changes our perceptions. That reminds me of a powerful quote from Coleman Barks. He said in his book, The Soul of Rumi, Rumi's love poems draw us into a morphic field of attention and intention. We may grow more ready to accept that artists and saints draw us into perception-changing regions, and that those regions guide our evolving consciousness. I said, wow, B, I've loved that quote for years and so appreciated the perception-changing regions I've been drawn into as I've read mystical writings from various traditions. Today, I'm seeing it differently, though. How I love that I am seeing differently ideas about seeing differently. And we laughed. And I said, suddenly it isn't about saints and artists, but about relaxing and releasing resistance. Those saints and artists have been those who were able to relax, released resistance, and flow with their ongoing connection to source. Their flow then helped us get into the flow. But it's really about getting into the flow, not about the intermediary saint or artist who helped us get into the flow. Whatever helps us relax will take us into those perception-changing regions that guide our evolving consciousness and changes in perception. Oh my God, this is exciting. I feel like I'm onto something big here. As we relax and connect, we are flowing with you. So whatever helps us do that, music, nature, meditation, inspiring literature, helps us tap in. He said, opening your heart with a soft willingness is a perception-changing region. I said, I'm sitting here feeling kind of stunned, B. It's like this big, spacious feeling just opened up in my heart and mind. He said, it's okay to just sit with the openness, relax, and breathe. Everything you think you want is already here. As you relax, you will perceive more and more beauty, grace, health, wholeness, energy, intention, intelligence, abundance, and joy. It's okay to just sit with the openness as you relax and breathe. The other piece that I found that really touched me was a section about a year later where I was talking to the beloved about how doctors sometimes predict trouble, calling a condition precancerous or pre-diabetic. And that seemed meaningful to me in that Bob was in the hospital this week, and I was talking to other people with family members in the hospital. And so I was thinking about doctors and that connection about what they were saying. And I was reminded that there is a phrase from Ernest Holmes that I paraphrased into, ultimately, there is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated, but only a wholeness to be revealed that's always been there. And I thought, so instead of calling a semi-disturbed state pre-disease, I could call it pre-wholeness. And B said, we love it, C. We always perceive your wholeness, of course, even when you are not in the moment. But if you recognize that your body is always tending toward balance and health, energy, and harmony, you can tip the balance in your favor by recognizing that temporary condition is on your path to perceiving your greater wholeness. I said, I love having a way to help me remember that what always needs to change first is my perception, beloved. The wholeness is always there, visible to you in every condition, situation, place, and person. I want to see it as you see it. And B said, and we're so glad you're temporarily observing the pre-wholeness, because in those moments, your unique preferences are born and you keep the universe expanding. We love your desire for something new and different. We also love your increasing desire to keep in harmony with what you want, rather than staying stuck by worrying more about what you don't want. I said I could also see myself in pre-abundance or pre-love or pre-harmony. That's exciting. Bringing all those qualities to mind does remind me that all well-being is ultimately omnipresent. I am in well-being in this moment, or temporary pre-well-being, as I learn to perceive what already is. And B said, we prefer the phrase as you allow yourself to perceive your well-being. It's not really a process of learning, it's a shift in perception. It can take place in a nanosecond with a little soft willingness. I said, "Oh, I love the feeling of soft willingness. It's like a cozy blanket on a cold day or a refreshing glass of icy lemonade on a hot day. It's the pause that refreshes." And we laughed. And B said, "You got it right. See, it's the pause." I said, "The pause." B said, "The pause. Take a break. Insert a comma. Interrupt the flow somehow when you feel a little disturbance in the force." So, what we're doing is remembering the truth of our being. It's everywhere. Reminders of it are everywhere. I kept seeing it this week. One of my friends on Facebook posted Bob Ross, remember the painter on TV teaching painting? Said, "All it takes is just a little change of perspective, and you begin to see a whole new world." And Eric Butterworth was quoted on the Unity Facebook page as saying, "When something in your world is awry, normally the first concern is to set things right. However, when you understand the law, you will realize that the greatest need is not to set it right, but to see it rightly. Right seeing is one of the most important keys to the effective demonstration of truth. More important than changing things out there is changing the way you see them. Changing the way we see it, changing where we stand so that the perspective is different, remembering that what's out there and what's in here may look different in the moment. But when we return to that place of peace at the center, when we acknowledge the oneness, when we feel the love, we remember that it's all one. One love, one life, one mind, one power, one peace, one grace. And it allows us to relax and allow and begin to wonder how it could be a little different than it is now. When something appears to be going wrong, and I'm trying to look for that place where I say, it looks like it's going wrong, but I believe that it's in the process somehow of going right from broader perspective. And I remember to at least acknowledge that this is temporary. It's in the process of changing as I change my perspective, my perception will change. And when I see through the eyes of Source from the inside of love and peace and grace, I look out at a world that contains an awful lot of beauty and harmony and joy. It allows me to relax and come back into alignment, and then the solutions change. The relationships change, the experiences change, because I am choosing to focus differently. I am choosing to use the power that I have to focus on the divine rather than the temporal in the moment. And it is such a relief. It is such a relief, and I am so grateful that we have these beautiful practitioners and ministers in our community who pray for us when we don't remember ourselves. I sent a lot of texts this week, and you guys helped me come back into harmony around what was happening with Bob, and inviting all of my prayer partners to pray about him. It helped me relax and trust that everything was unfolding for good. So I don't just preach this, I practice it as best I can. And I'm ever so grateful that you give me the opportunity to share the experience of that practice periodically through these talks and this study group. So, thank you. I love you, and so it is.